All right, this morning we'll be in 1 Timothy chapter 6, and we're going to look at verses 6 through 11. So, obviously, this passage is regarding money and the desire for money. Verse 9 specifically, those who desire to be rich fall into temptation and a snare and into many foolish and harmful lusts which drown men in destruction and perdition. Now, here's the problem. I want to kind of lay this out because I think all of us need to kind of wrestle with this a little bit. Any of us here rich?
Spiritually.
Well, no, I'm talking about financially. Are we rich?
A lot of us are rich,
and some of us are very rich. I mean, we have a lot of money in the bank, and we have nice homes, and when we got our job, did we try to find a job that paid minimum wage, or did we want a job where we could make some money? So we want money, right? I mean, is money necessary?
Yes.
Is ambition an important part of our culture, an important part of our life? Does God look down on ambition? Should we not go to school? Should we not get degrees? Should we not try to find jobs that pay good money?
He said we shouldn't be a sluggard, that's for sure.
Okay. So, was Abraham rich? Was Solomon rich? So, the problem is in outlining what this means, those who desire to be rich. Because as we have found in our culture, with God's providence and with the efforts that we put forth, it can happen in our culture. You can become wealthy if you make wise decisions in your youth, and it's just God's providence. So the word desire, though, it's kind of an interesting word. It doesn't mean lust. It's not the word for covetousness. It is a word for setting the mind and the will. So the person who sets their mind and their will to become rich. Now, this isn't talking about the person who wants to be a good employee and wants to work hard for his employer, and as a result of that, he gets raises, or he wants to, or she wants to be a doctor, a lawyer, something more than a minimum wage type worker. Anything wrong with those things? Nobody answering?
No.
I got one shake of the head. Okay. So there's nothing wrong with that. Matter of fact, we're commanded to do that. We are commanded to serve our masters as we do the Lord. And we are commanded to develop ourselves. Whatever your hand finds to do,
do it with all your might.
Do it with all your might. So if somebody wants to contribute to society by getting involved in activities that are of a more complicated nature, the more complicated the job is, the more it pays. And so a lot of people today, is it really hard to become a millionaire anymore?
No.
I mean, if you make even minimum wage, I think, what did I read? Minimum wage now in Colorado is $12 an hour, is it today?
Not yet.
Not quite. It's hard if you're working, yeah.
Oh, what? I thought it was today. When does it start?
Today.
But it goes up to like 10 or something.
First.
Like 9 or 10.
It starts today.
Oh, but it's not 12, it's 9 or 10? Okay, well, forget it. I was going to make a point, but it doesn't matter. It's not germane to the class. So, I think that the real issue is between verse 6 and verse 9. Godliness with contentment. Did Paul know how to abound? Did he know the secret of how to abound? Did he know the secret of how to be abased? He learned how to be content in whatever situation that he was in. So, if you're wealthy and you're content, if you're poor and you're content, then you are going to escape the dangers of verse 9. But if you're poor or rich, and you have set your mind to become wealthy, in other words, that's the goal. That's what this word means. It means setting a goal, making a conscious decision that I'm going to become wealthy. Now, once that decision has been made, then we fall into temptation, snares, foolish and hurtful lusts, which drown men in destruction and perdition. So we kind of have to isolate here exactly what it is that's the concern. Because in verse 10, the same thing. The love of money is a root of all kinds of evil, for which some, having strayed from the faith in their greediness and pierced themselves through with many sorrows. But you, O man of God, flee these things. Now, so the preachers, the people who are seeking to serve God, and of course I don't think man of God would necessarily infer only the preachers, because Timothy is to flee these things. Are we all men of God in a sense? Yeah, I mean we're all, and the word men, of course, generic. It's not the term male. So we have to flee from these things. And yet in our culture, what do we end up doing? We kind of pursue them, don't we? You can't be a diligent worker in America and have ambition without the financial benefits that come from that. But there's a difference between setting the goal for the financial benefits and setting the goal for being a good worker. Carl?
Well, the difference between USA and other countries is the fact that we have opportunity for investments. And that's where a man becomes rich, is investment. If a man works from Monday to Friday on a regular job without working two or three different jobs or 16 hours a day and neglecting his family and neglecting the worship, that's where the problem comes in.
Right.
But America, you can save so much maybe and invest, and that investment is what makes you rich. It's not our day-to-day work
later. Right. And, of course, that's true for some. I mean, there are other people. I mean, if you want to be a real estate agent and you want to put in 20 hours a week, can you become wealthy?
Yeah.
Yeah, you can become wealthy. But that would be the problem with this.
Yeah.
And so I think that what we have to look at is, what do you have to let go in order to accomplish whatever your goal is? Now, if your goal is to be a good worker and it's to serve God, then if the opportunity to become rich arises with the often baggage of you have to sin or you have to do something wrong, what will people do? They've set their mind on being a Christian. They've set their mind on being a hard worker. The financial benefits are certainly a part of what they're doing, but they're not exclusively important. Ray, did you have your hand up?
A lot of people that are millionaires have claimed that they don't put God first. They put their money first.
Right.
You know, I mean, that's the way it is. If you really want to become a millionaire, billionaire, you don't think about God. Because people don't want to hear that. They just want to hear the worldly things. And then, I mean, that's the way I've heard the way it is. Well, there's another who talks about it because he makes a lot of money.
Right.
And the way people at his job, they don't care about that stuff. They don't want to hear religion. They want to hear, well, what does doctor do today? How much money can we get out of this person? I mean, that's the way it really is. Reality.
Right. And didn't Jesus say that in the Sermon on the Mount? You can't serve
two masters.
You can't serve two masters. You either hold to one and
despise.
I mean, this isn't just a decision of priorities. Ultimately, if you serve God, what will happen to your desire for wealth? You'll despise it. You'll despise it. We brought nothing in. We take nothing out. If we get caught up in wanting money, then the important things of life, what happens to them? They get neglected. They get despised. So Jesus says you cannot serve God and mammon, which is another word for wealth or another word for wanting to be rich. So you're either going to hold to the one and despise the other. But the bottom line is, and here's the issue, if God's over here and wealth is over here, then what has to happen? Can you get to both places? If you're standing here, you got to go this way or this way. And that's what Jesus said. They don't lead to the same direction. They don't create the same emotions. They don't create the same priorities. They don't create the same values. They don't have the same hopes and dreams. And so when one desires to be rich, then that is going to ultimately crush out everything else. And so that's what we have to look at. I mean, as I said, a lot of people in America are wealthy, not because they pursued wealth, but because through frugality, through wisdom, through investments, as Carl said, through God's providence, through the fact that we were born into a country where these things could happen. And so that's why when we get to chapter 6 and verse 17, command those who are rich in this present age not to be haughty nor to trust in the uncertain riches, but in the living God who gives us richly all things to enjoy. Does he tell them to get rid of their money? Does a Christian have to divest himself of all of his assets in order to be a Christian? No. But wealth is an opportunity. And what does Jesus say about opportunities in Matthew chapter 25 in the parable of the talents? The more talents you have, the more responsibility you have, right? We'll talk about that in our lesson this morning, so I'm not going to pursue that. All right, so in verse 9, we really have to wrestle with this because most of us could be in danger of this. Most of us have opportunities to be wealthy simply by living our life and doing our job and being the kind of person that we should be. And so we have to look at that. And we have to ask ourselves, okay, am I doing this job to be rich or am I doing this job to serve my employer? And riches are simply the fringe benefit or the side benefit of it. Now, you remember Jesus, that rich young ruler came to him and he asked him, what do I need to do to inherit eternal life? And Jesus looked at his soul and what did he say he needed to do?
Give away all his possessions.
Okay, sell all that you have, give to the poor, and follow me. What did Jesus see in his heart then? Because Paul doesn't say that to all wealthy people. So what was in that man's heart?
Desire to be rich.
Okay, yeah. Covetousness, the desire to be rich, greed. There was something there that Jesus could see. And obviously, if Jesus can see it, can we see it? So we have to look within our heart. Because if we set our minds on wanting to be rich, not wanting to be successful in our occupation because we do a good job, that's not wrong. But the wealth that could come from it is, as I said a moment ago, it's a fringe benefit. It's not the central point. It's not the main goal. It just comes as a result of doing those things. And if that's our attitude, is it a desire to be rich that's causing us to do it? No. So since it's not the desire to be rich, then it's not going to lead to these things. But that's the issue. I mean, you look at Solomon. Solomon, I don't know if Solomon decided to pursue wealth or not, but did he pierce himself through with many sorrows? Yeah. So there was a component there. Carl?
Proverbs 10:4 says, a slack hand causes poverty, but the hand of the diligent makes rich.
Right. And that's the way God created our world. The more diligent you are, the more successful you are, and the more successful you are, the more benefits come to you. And wealth is one of those benefits. And he's given that to a lot of people. And there's nothing wrong with that. The problem we have to focus on is the will. It is the will. Do I want to be rich? Is that my goal? Is my goal when I'm 20 years old to become a millionaire, to put forth whatever time and effort it takes to become wealthy? Not by doing the job, but by gaining the benefits. And so there's a huge difference, and there's a huge difference in where people go. Brian?
Yeah, it's interesting. You kind of hit on this, but... working hard, you know, those are all American virtues, if you will. Work hard, earn money. How far do you take that? And the farther you take that, if you want to work 60 or 70 hours a week to be successful, maybe you don't have a desire to be rich, you just have a desire to be successful. Any of these things can take you away from God.
Right.
And take you away from doing His work. And this is just another one of those things. Anything that you would focus on to the exclusion of serving the Lord and working for the Lord is going to be a problem.
Right. Okay, so any question on this? Because unless we understand this, we're just kind of, you know, some of us that have money may be a little uneasy or a little uncomfortable. There's nothing wrong with being wealthy. That's not the problem here. The problem is not the wealth. The problem is in the will. Just like in verse 10. The problem is not money. The problem is the love of money. When people say money is the root of all evil, what do you have to do? Have to correct them, right? Yeah. It's not money. It's the love of money, not money in itself. If it was inherently evil for this to be, would God have created the world the way he did? See, our world is created so that the harder you work, the more success you have. And the more success you have, the more comfortable you can become. And there's nothing wrong with that. As a matter of fact, I think that's part of what being a Christian is putting forth the hand of the diligent. What does God say about slothful people? See, that's wrong.
Look to the ant.
Yeah, go to the ant, you sluggard. So sloth, you say, well, I don't want to be rich, so I'm going to be lazy. Well, no, then you've gone to the other extreme. George?
When we consider what verse 9 means, I think verse 10... in the first part of it, really explains that to a large extent, for the love of money is the root of all evil. It's another way of saying what he said in verse 9, seems to me.
Yeah, it's an application, that's right. And there's a definite parallel between the desire to be rich and the love of money. They fall into the same category. I think it starts... You know, it's really covetousness. You remember in Matthew chapter 6, Jesus says that you've heard don't commit adultery, but I say to you what? Where does it start?
In the heart.
Starts in the heart. Same thing with murder. You've heard don't murder, but where does it start? It starts with anger. And here we find that it don't covet, well, where does it start? It starts with setting the purpose. As I said, the problem we have in English is the word desire and the word lust are often synonymous terms. So if I, like Proverbs says, do not desire her in your heart. Well, what do we understand that to mean? See, that's lust. But this word is not lust. Matter of fact, this is the word Paul used earlier in the book when he said, I desire that the men pray in every place. Now, that desire was a purpose. It was an intent. It was a goal. And so the same word is used here. So when we set our goal, we set our intent, we set our purpose on becoming wealthy, at that moment, we fall into temptation. The desire, the will, the purpose itself creates the temptation. Now, you remember temptation in James chapter 1? Let no man say he is tempted with God, because God doesn't tempt man with evil, but each man is tempted when what?
He's drawn away
by his own lust and enticed. Now again, that's what you fall into. This isn't a part of it. The desire to be rich is not a temptation. It is a desire. It is a purpose and a will. And once you purpose and will, then the temptation can come. So without that purpose and will, we can avoid this temptation. If we don't have the purpose and desire to be wealthy, then many of the temptations that come as a result of that will not occur. Now, what are some of the temptations that can occur if you want to be rich that won't occur if you just want to be successful, if you just want to be a good employee?
Take shortcuts.
Okay, take shortcuts.
Neglect the family, just as
all right.
Brian has said, neglect the family, neglect of the Lord, neglect for all the areas that we're responsible for that one pursuit.
Okay. So, what would tempt me to forsake the assembly? If I get double time and a half on Sunday because I have a job that does that, and so they come to me and say, look, you want to make some money this weekend, we need you to work Saturday and Sunday. What's the answer of the person who doesn't desire to be rich? I can work Saturday, but I can't work Sunday because that's a priority. But if the guy wants to be rich, what's he going to be wrestling with? What's the temptation going to be? To forsake the assembly. So when you make the purpose to be rich, then you create temptations that normally would not occur. Ray, did I see your hand up earlier?
Well, I was just going to say every Sunday, but once in a while for to make some money, not going to be a big deal.
Right.
I've heard a lot of people say, and that's not true. God looks at even
Well, and yeah, God wants loyalty.
If he knows that you don't have to work, but you want to because you don't want to
work. Right. Okay, so that's a temptation. Then what about this snare? A snare is what catches an animal. You know, you've seen it where you put your foot into a lasso and what happens? It snaps up and drags you up into the air. And so now you've been ensnared. So when one purposes to be rich, first comes the temptation, then the snare. So we become tied to something. We get locked into something. We make ourselves a partner with somebody else in order to become wealthy, and that partner is an evil person doing wicked things, and because we're a partner, what happens? We're ensnared. We get dragged along. We're yoked. Don't be unequally yoked with unbelievers. Don't put yourself in a situation where, Jeannie and I were talking about this a few months ago. If a woman is married to a businessman and the businessman is cheating on his taxes, and it comes time to sign the tax form, what's the wife going to have to do?
Refuse.
See, that puts you in a tough spot. I mean, the husband says, you sign that. And so what are you going to do? And, of course, that's, I don't know, I leave people make those kind of decisions for themselves. I don't try to give them an answer for that, because those are the kind of things that are... How do I put it? If you're put in a position where the person that you're linked to is wicked, are you necessarily wicked if you're drug along with them? Is that grounds for divorce? Can I divorce my husband because he cheats on his taxes and I have to, or should I just turn him in? Is that the way I should deal with this? So, it's not a zero-sum simple thing here. Go ahead, Carl.
We got to obey God rather than man.
Well, that's true. That's true. But she's sure going to make herself miserable if she turns her husband in and makes him a tax cheat and loses everything she has, and then the husband starts beating on her. Anyway, as I said, let's drop that one. That's not involved in this. So I shouldn't have brought it up. Okay, so first comes the purpose, then the temptation, then the snare, then foolish and harmful lusts, which drown men in destruction and in perdition. Now, we've all seen the cartoon of Midas, right? He gets the opportunity that everything he touches is going to become gold. And then what does he realize when it's time to eat? He can't eat. And he wants to go to bed. He wants a nice soft bed. But as soon as he touches the bed, it turns into a hard piece of gold. And so after a while, what do you realize? That desire to be wealthy has now ensnared and created some terrible, terrible sets of circumstances. And so there are foolish and harmful lusts created when this person makes that decision. So this makes it a little simpler, because if I'm not feeling these temptations, not ensnared, and I don't have these foolish and harmful lusts, then even if I'm making money and even if I'm becoming wealthy, do I fall into this passage? Because if the fruits are not coming, then what does that mean? It means I haven't sown the seed. So, but if these temptations and snares and foolish and harmful lusts are occurring, then regardless of how hard I deny it, and I say, well, it's not a love of money with me, I just want to succeed. Well, but what are the fruits showing? By their fruits you will know. So this is something that becomes very critical. And one of the things that I found is that when an opportunity to give comes, like Barnabas found, if you have a desire to be rich, then you do what Ananias and Sapphira did. If you don't have the desire to be rich, you do what Barnabas did. And so did Ananias and Sapphira get ensnared in some very foolish and hurtful lusts? And did they drown in destruction and perdition? Yeah. And, like Peter said, while it was yours, it was yours. You weren't required to do this. How is it that you conceived in your heart to do this thing? In other words, they were trying to combine serving God with covetousness. And how did it work out? It didn't work out at all. And same thing with Achan. I mean, when Achan coveted that Babylonian garment and that wedge of gold, He put himself and the entire nation at risk. So his desire caused him to be tempted and ensnared, and then things just went downhill. So if I'm not falling into these temptations, then I've got a pretty good answer that I haven't made that desire. I haven't made that purpose. However, if the temptations are coming, then regardless of how I'm justifying it, what do I know? See, I've crossed this line. It's time to resign this job, whatever it is. There are some jobs that will lead to wealth, but if those jobs come with temptations and snares and foolish and harmful lusts, then what do I have to do? I have to give that up. And so when somebody says, here's the job that I want to get involved with, and I can see that if he takes that job, he's going to be missing services, he's going to be put into positions where he has to lie or cheat or steal or things along that line, then the advice, of course, would be don't do it. Okay, so let's move now to verse 10. For, now the word for is always the term for the reason, the explanation, and the cause of the previous statement. So the reason why those who desire to be rich fall into these situations is because the love of money is a root. What's a root? If a tree has a root, what's that root do?
Feed it.
Okay, it feeds it. Does it stabilize it? When the wind's blowing, what keeps it up? The roots. When it's dry and hot, what keeps the tree from withering? The roots. So the roots have become an idiom for the source, the strength, and the stability of something. So if I get my strength and my stability from money, then it's going to become a root of all kinds of evil. And that, again, is why Paul says in verse 17, those who are rich, don't be haughty. Don't trust in the uncertainty of riches. Don't let that be your stability, but in the living God. So the love of money is a root. George?
Sometimes we hear people talking about how evil the rich people are in this country or wherever they are, and it's as if they all fall in this category here. But we need to keep in mind that we can be poor and be in this same category because we're making riches too important to us, and we're cheating and lying and stealing or whatever we might be doing to try to get rich.
Right. Yeah, and this has been one of the sad results, I guess, of where our politics have gone, is we have this class warfare now where we're pitting one group against another as if, is being poor necessarily bad? Is being rich necessarily bad? No, they're just conditions of life, and they are based on time and chance. They are based on the abilities that God has given to us. When envy is sought, when people try to create envy over certain situations that have occurred, what's going to happen? Because Jesus said, a house divided against itself cannot stand. And America is being divided against itself right now. And so it's a frightening time. Because, you know, when I look at this, I think to myself, these wealthy people are the ones that are giving us jobs. They're the ones that are keeping the money flowing. Do I want to get rid of those wealthy people? No. If I get rid of all the wealthy people, then we're going to Africa. We're going to be a third world country. If we don't have any wealthy people, the reason America is where everybody wants to come is because of the opportunity to become wealthy. And that opportunity has occurred because of the ingenuity of people, and their ingenuity has created wealth. Well, there's nothing to do about that. If a guy comes up with a good idea, if a guy figures out how to make a microwave oven, is he going to become rich? Is that bad? No. A lot of people get jobs because he came up with that idea and he gets rich. And after he's rich, do we say, you're a bad person? So that doesn't make any sense to me. Now, there are bad rich people. There are bad poor people. I mean, there's no one has a an ownership. All poor people are good. All rich people are bad. Is that true? No. And so the critical element is right here. It's the desires in the heart that determine. And again, there's some bad people out there, some stingy, wealthy people out there who are mistreating their workers. I think we've all read about what was happening before the unions came along in the, at the turn of the century. These wealthy people were abusing and misusing and mistreating their workers. And that wasn't right. But we don't see a lot of that today. Okay, anyway, let's get off that bandwagon. The love of money is a root. So it's where the source of all of these things come. Now, what is it a root of? All kinds of what? Now, and it's kind of interesting. The Old King James has, it is the root of all evil. Whereas the later translations have come into it with the root of all kinds of evil. Now, it's based on how you define the word all. And let me read you the definition. Any and all of a class indicated. Any and every. All sorts. So how would you translate that? All. I could say all. Or you could say all kinds of. Every class, every kind of evil. So now does that mean that evil is exclusively tied to money? People commit evil for lots of reasons. But when you have the love of money, the root taps into what? It taps into all kinds of evil. So when, let me rephrase that because that's not the way it should have come out. The love of money is the what the root is tapping into. And as a result of that, all kinds of evil are going to be brought about. So these people... You know, Michael and I were talking about this in marketing. If you want to be successful in marketing, then you have to, what we would call wine and dine, the people that you want to work with. And so where do you spend some of your time if you're not careful? You have to go to the bars. You have to go to the bar. He's telling me all the different things that you have to do. And is that a good job to get into then? No, there's certain jobs. I mean, marketing is marketing, and it's like every other field. There's marketing in good ways and marketing in bad ways, but it's a job that tends toward all kinds of evil. Did I see a hand, Carl?
ESV says, it is through this craving that some has wandered away from the faith.
Right. Yeah, and that's another word for the love of money. Is a craving. It's literally the love of silver is the Greek word. So this love of money, this desire to be rich, this greediness or craving. So those are the three critical indicators. If those aren't there, then if you're becoming wealthy, there's no danger, no risk at all. And I wouldn't tell somebody like that, you need to sell all that you have, give it to the Lord, and then follow Jesus. But a lot of people, that would be the best thing they could do. So some have strayed from the faith in their greediness or in their cravings or in their desire to become wealthy and pierced themselves through with many sorrows. Now, is Balaam a good example of this? Balaam was a godly, devout individual. God appeared to him. He was considered a prophet. But what happened? He wanted that stuff that Balak offered him, right? He wanted it. And God saw that he wanted it. So when, because would it have been wrong for him to go and bless Israel like he ended up doing? But because this man had it, what did God say about tempted above what we're able to bear? He won't do it. So he told Balaam, don't go. Well, once he went, what happened? He had a temptation he was not able to bear. So he pushed right through it because of his desire. And it's fascinating because you remember the angel of the Lord is an ally to all people who want to do God's will. And he is an enemy of all those people who are opposed to what he was trying to accomplish. When Balaam got on that donkey. Who was there to oppose him? Angel of the Lord. What does that tell us? He changed sides. That night, he changed sides. What he intended to do when he got on that donkey caused the angel of the Lord to stand before him with a sword. And so Balaam is an example of this. That love of money caused him to stray from the faith, and in his greediness, he pierced himself through with many sorrows. Carl?
And he was blind because the donkey saw the angel and he couldn't see it.
Right. Yeah. Because he had turned himself into an enemy. God had appeared to him many times, and that angel of the Lord. You remember Joshua? Could he see the angel of the Lord? Yeah. He said, "Are you for us or against us?" And the angel said, "No, I've come from the Lord of hosts." And of course, at that point, Joshua falls down on his face. Okay. So any questions on this? We've all seen it happen. I've seen Christians that have done this. You know, they got a job, they got promoted, they started getting wealthy, they started smoozing, so to speak, with worldly people, and pretty soon they're no longer faithful to God. And it all started because of that purpose. They didn't purpose that job for the intent of serving God and being a good person. They wanted to be wealthy. Brian?
Yeah, and he puts it in perspective in verse 7. You know, we brought nothing into this world, and it's certain we can carry nothing out. So, sort of pointless. You can desire this wealth. You can amass tons of wealth. When you die, you're leaving it all behind.
That's right. That's right. So if it just happens, then that's okay. But if you've set your goal on it, then it becomes a terrible root of all kinds of terrible things. And then it goes on to say, they've pierced themselves through with many sorrows. When a guy loses his wife, his family, his faith, one day he wakes up, is he happy with all those decisions? No, he's not going to be happy with all those decisions. Okay, so verse 11 then, but you, O man of God. Now, so if I want to put myself in this category, then I'm going to flee. I'm going to flee any desire for wealth. And like I say, I mean, I've talked to young people and they're just agonizing over this. Should I just take a minimum wage job? Should I just be happy to not go to college and just barely subsist? What should we tell them? Well, you don't have to do that. You just have to guard your heart from the desire, the purpose. If you want to be successful, if you want to do something, I mean, a lot of young men, they want to make a difference. They want to do something that's going to make a difference. And oftentimes, when you set that as your goal, wealth is going to come. Carl?
I witnessed an occasion once when a person was succeeded into management from a union job. But then in management, he was required to go to all the office Christmas parties and participate in that type of thing. But he refused to do it.
Right.
So there are occasions when one might have an opportunity to become wealthy, but then what does it demand?
Right. And that's exactly the point. If you've gone in there to get rich, then you have to start making compromises, right? Because that's what you went in there for, and you've got to stay there in order to fulfill your purpose. If you went there to be a better worker and continue service to God, and you find out that you can't serve God in this position, then what do you say? I made a mistake. I'm going to go back down. Or I'm just going to take a stand, and if they say you can't be here if you take that stand, what so be it. Because I'm not in here for the money. I'm in here for my service to God. I'm in here to do what is right. So we have to flee. And again, whenever you find yourself in a situation where you're being tempted to do something that is inappropriate in order to maintain the wealth that you have, then you need to look at this very carefully. Charles?
Yeah, also, along the same lines, a lot of times people, Christians, will get caught up in the fact that they're kind of maybe getting some kind of competition with people on your jobs or whatever, and you listen to people and they talk about how successful they are, and if you don't watch it, you try to, get into the same type of situation that they're in, so it'll make you also try to do the same thing that they're doing. And you have to really, you know, be aware of your surroundings, and, you know, you get in conversation with people and say, okay, well, I did this and I accomplished that or whatever. So you start thinking the same thing too. And after a while, it gets you to a point right there where you say, okay, well, I'm one up on you. I can do the same thing, you know. So
That's an excellent point, because that's when the pride of life kicks in. It's not always a lust of the flesh. I mean, covetousness is a lust of the flesh. But does the pride of life sometimes kick covetousness in? You know, what do we used to call it? Keeping up with the
Joneses.
Keeping up with the Joneses. So if they get a new car, we need a new car. They get a new TV, well, we got to be equal to them. But what do you have to be able to keep up with the Joneses? Got to have money. So this is where the vicious cycle. So sometimes it's pride of life that actually starts all this. And sometimes it's the lust that starts all this, and then the pride of life makes it continue on. So both of those are involved there, and we need to carefully monitor that. We need to carefully monitor all of our decisions and kind of go through, okay, why am I doing this? Is this the pride of life? Is this the lust of the flesh? Is this the lust of the eyes? Or is this an appropriate response? Is this the way that it should be? And when we do that, then we're fulfilling what Paul said in the series that we're doing, which is whatsoever things are true and just and honorable. So in order to flee one thing, you have to pursue another. And isn't that what Jesus said in the Sermon on the Mount? If you decide you're going to serve God, then what will have to happen with all wealth? You're going to flee it. You're going to leave it alone. And so if you want to pursue righteousness, godliness, faith, love, patience, and gentleness, then you have to flee from the desire of money, because the desire of money will nullify these things. So if I'm pursuing righteousness, which is justice, which is always giving man his fair due, and even going above and beyond to make sure that it's fair. And of course, these other terms, godliness, which is knowing God is watching us and knowing that God, the decisions that I make are either pleasing as a sweet aroma to him or an abomination and disgusting to him. And so righteousness, this equity, and this godliness, this desire to be seen as a good individual in the eyes of God, with those two things alone, what happens to the love of money? So you're going to run away from it because you want to. See, some people read verse 11 and they think, well, I'm going to fight this desire to love money. No, just pursue these other things. If you pursue the other things, what will happen?
You won't have that desire for money.
Yeah, it's just naturally going to occur. But if you try to fight it by sheer grit and determination, then you never grow out of it. And so that's the difference. You know, you can't have a vacuum. You have to fill one thing up with something else. You can't try to rip something out. You have to put something else in to take its place. And so that's why we are going to be filled with the Spirit, and we're not going to fulfill the desires of the flesh. So the one is pushing out the other. And that's really the idea here. Carl?
If we will never have the peace of God that passes all understanding, it would have the stress in fighting something else.
That's right. That's right. So if I'm caught up in the rat race and the hustle and bustle of becoming wealthy, will I ever find the peace of God which passes understanding? So they're two different directions. Charles?
It also, too, the Bible teaches us to seek ye first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all of these things will be added unto us.
Right.
If we seek God and his righteousness. In other words, we need to seek those things that God would have us to do and to have, whatever. And he's going to add these things to us. We don't have to go around, okay, I'm going to do everything that I can to get this, to get that, or whatever. In due time, it will come.
Right.
If it's his will for us to have those things.
Yeah. And that's really what Paul says in Ephesians chapter 6. If you're a servant and you serve your master like you serve the Lord, are you going to be successful? Yeah. And the more successful you become, and the more important you become to the company, the more money you're going to be making. So if you seek first God's kingdom and God's righteousness, you're going to be that good employee, and then, if God wills, the wealth will come. But if you pursue the wealth, then, you know, so it's all intent. It's all whatever the purpose is. If the purpose is to serve God and wealth comes, if the purpose is to become wealthy, then it goes the other way. All right, we'll go ahead and stop there. We'll pick up in verse 12 next week. And because I think we've probably gone over and over righteousness, godliness, faith, love, patience, and gentleness enough times that I think we have a pretty good feel for them. So we'll start in verse 12 next week. Thank you.